alms. Alms for the poor. Alms. Alms for the poor. Hey. Hey, what's that noise out there? What's going on? Really? Jesus of Nazareth is passing by? Woohoo! Oh, wait. This is my chance. But I know. Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me! Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me! What do you mean, be quiet? This is my chance! Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me! Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me! What? What's that? He's calling for me? Wonderful! Take me there! Take me! Oh, jeez! Oh, I'm so... Thank you for stopping for me. Thank you, I've been waiting this day all my life. What do I want you to do? Well, you see... I've got gout, and it's just causing me horrible pain in this toe. I mean, yeah, I'm surprised you didn't see me hobbling over here. I can hardly walk anymore. Do you think you could do something for this gout? My eyes? Yeah, they haven't worked for a long time. But this toe, oh, it just really hurts. Would you? Oh, that's so much better. Oh, thank you, Jesus. Oh, thank you. Well, have a nice day. As Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. This is Luke 18:35-43. You'll want to follow along. When he heard the crowd going by, he asked what was happening. They told him, Jesus of Nazareth is passing by. He called out, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Those who led the way rebuked him and told him to be quiet. Thank you, Karina, for chiming. That was unplanned. But he shouted all the louder, Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped and ordered the man to be brought to him. When he came near, Jesus asked him, What do you want me to do for you? Lord, I want to see, he replied. Jesus said, Receive your sight, your faith has healed you. Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus, praising God. When all the people saw it, they also praised God. Just the facts, ma'am. As Jesus approached Jericho, who was sitting by the roadside? A blind man, thank you. How did he discover that something unusual was going on? He heard. What did he hear? A whole crowd passing by. He could tell something was going on. What did he do when he heard that a crowd going by? Yes, he asked, what's happening? And what did he learn? Jesus of Nazareth is passing by. How strongly did he react to that? Yeah, quite strongly. Why might that have been significant to him? Jesus of Nazareth is passing by. I mean, we've never heard of this blind man before. We don't know what he knows, but what can we conclude? Why might it have been significant to him to hear those words, Jesus of Nazareth is passing by?
He was a healer. He'd done done miraculous things.
He must have heard that Jesus could do miracles, that Jesus had helped people just like him. How many people like that were there wandering around the streets of Jericho in those days? No, I mean, who could do miracles and heal the blind? Not too many. So he's heard, he has a strong reaction because he's heard that Jesus can help people like him. And he probably thinks that Jesus is the only one who could help someone like him. What might he have felt when he heard that Jesus was within earshot?
This was his only chance.
What emotions are in that? Inspiration, right? Hope? Anticipation? What else?
Desperation.
Desperation. Anything else? You know, hope is a strange mixture of emotions, isn't it? A strange mixture of emotions. This is my chance, but because it's hope, that means it's not guaranteed. You see, Jesus was passing by. He was passing by. And that meant opportunity and anxiety. All at the same time. I imagine he was feeling heart palpitations. I read a story, I'm pretty sure it was a fictional story, but it's based on reality. This last week, that gave me sort of a sense of the emotions of hope. It was set in the South Seas on a small atoll. It was a story, it started out really sort of with a trader landing on this island. But, well, I guess it's the story of a pearl, interestingly enough. I'm going to think about this story. It might come in handy. It's the story of a huge pearl that this guy finds, and then he's basically robbed of it by somebody who owes him money. And then a hurricane comes and sweeps that person away. But it also sweeps away his mother-in-law. And she lands on a little uninhabited island in this hurricane story. And the guy's dead body floats up on shore, and she rifles through his stuff and comes out with the pearl. It's kind of a gruesome story, okay? But the part that really, that stuck in my mind, the emotions that I felt, were this woman, right? She's got the pearl, this pearl that's worth all this money, back. But she's on an uninhabited island after a hurricane, and they're not going to come looking for anyone there. The rescue ships will come to the main island. You know, they know people live there. But no one's coming where she is. And so her initial thought is despair. But as she looks through the wreckage on the island, before she decides to lay down and die, she finds some tinned fish, you know, cans of sardines, and there's an old broken canoe that was washed ashore, but nothing to paddle with. So she cuts off her hair, braids it together, and uses it to tie an old broken board on a broom handle. She takes a tin of sardines, eats the sardines. I mean, she took a few. There were a few tins. Puts them in the canoe and launches her canoe out back to the main island. She spends half of her time bailing with a tin and the other half of the time paddling with her paddle made out of her own hair. After a period of time, though, I mean, that's like a day and a night she's paddling, it becomes plain, though she can see the island she's headed to on the horizon, that the current is going to carry her out into the open sea and she'll be lost And she has to decide, do I give up hope? This boat is not going to make it to that island. But if I jump out and swim, maybe I can beat the currents. Well, what do you think happens after a hurricane to all the living creatures that are washed into the sea? Yes. And what happens to them? The sharks eat them. So she's about to jump out of her boat into shark-infested waters. The sharks have just been eating humans that have been flailing around in the hurricane-stirred waters. But it's her only hope. So she jumps in and begins to swim. And pretty soon a tiger shark begins circling her. And I don't know if you've watched enough nature shows to know how they work, right? They circle closer and closer, and they kind of check out if nothing bad happens. They come up, and they bump you. And if you don't react like you're really dangerous, then the next time they come around, they take a bite at you. And they might just do a little taste, you know, just to see what you're going to do and if you taste good. And then, if nothing bad happens, they come back and eat you. Well, she knew that. And so whenever she could see the fin, she would swim. When she couldn't see the fin, she put her head down in the water and watched. And she finally realized he's not going to go away. And so when he got within about 8 feet of her, she lunged at him. Blah! And he said, oh, this isn't as easy as those other, you know, bodies that I've eaten. And he went away. And finally, with her last ounces of strength, she got to the island, through the reef, up to the shore, and made it back home and returned the pearl to her son-in-law. Interesting reunion. Hope. Seeing the island in the distance that you know you must get to, but not being sure you can make it. He has hope that he didn't have before. But what an emotion. So, we talked about this already. How did he respond to the news that Jesus was nearby? What did he do?
He yelled out, Son of David,
have mercy on me. Why call out?
Because if he doesn't do something to stand out, then Jesus will be trying to walk.
Why not just run up to Jesus and throw himself at Jesus' feet like everybody else does? Yeah. Not only is he blind, I mean, he can't see anything, so he doesn't go running around anywhere. But he's blind, so he wouldn't recognize Jesus if he saw him. Well, you follow what I mean. If he could go running up to Jesus, he wouldn't know where to run up to. He wouldn't know Jesus. He's blind. He can't see. So he's dependent. His only chance is to call out into the darkness to Jesus and hope that Jesus hears him and responds. That's his only hope. He doesn't know that it will work. But if Jesus is as merciful as they told him, it's worth a try. So he cries out, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on him. What do people tell him? Oh, be quiet. Oh, get out of the way. Can you imagine? I get curious who in the world those people are. It just says the people, you know, leading the way. And we don't know who they were. But, you know, just a page back, who was it that was rebuking the little children who came to Jesus? It was the disciples. Yikes. I wouldn't be surprised. We don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was the disciples of Jesus telling him, quiet. We haven't got time for this now. You ever had disciples of Jesus discourage your pursuit of the mercy of God? But how did he respond to their rebuke? Turn up the volume. This is my chance. You're not going to discourage God. He said, this is not a popularity contest, okay? I don't care what you think. I'm going to be heard by Jesus if it's the last thing I do.
But he still is calling him the son of David.
Yes.
And then he said, he's calling Jesus of
Nazareth. Yes. Well, that tells us something about what he believed about Jesus before Jesus ever came along the road. How effective were his efforts? Before Jesus called for him. I love this part. What did Jesus do? He stopped. When someone in need cries out to God for mercy, he drops whatever he's doing. Where Jesus was going was not that important anymore. Who he was talking to was not that important anymore. And he ordered the man to be brought to him. When he came near, what did Jesus ask him? What do you want me to do for you? And how did he respond?
Lord, I want to see.
Not, oh, I've got this really sore. Not, you know, I could really use some money. Not, I'd like to be elected to. Lord, I want to see. Why does Jesus ask, what do you want? Doesn't he know? Even if he wasn't God. I mean, when you see the dark glasses and the cane, duh. Isn't it obvious? Or is it? What are the blind man's options? When Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? Yeah. What are your options? There's an unlimited number of options. But how appropriate would it be for Jesus to give him sight when what he really wanted was a binek? Jesus seems to be very careful about giving gifts where they're not wanted. Have you noticed that? Do you know why? Have you ever tried to give something to someone that they really desperately needed but didn't want? Usually we call it advice. Right? How does that work out typically? Not really well. When you try to give something away to someone, even if they desperately need it, if they don't want it, you cannot actually give it to them. You can set it down and walk away, but so will they. Wasn't it Jesus who said, do not cast your pearls before swine? They don't want them. So they won't take them. And even God cannot give what you need if you don't want it. God could animate your body for eternity. You understand what I mean? He could keep you physically alive for eternity. But he cannot make you live. Do you understand what I'm saying? He can keep you animated, but he cannot make you live. I love Proverbs 27:14. If a man loudly blesses his neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. Don't you need to be blessed? I need to be blessed. I even need to be blessed at 3 in the morning, don't you? Hallelujah, Ken said, with sleep. If you don't want to be blessed, even if someone pronounces a blessing on you, you won't be blessed. No matter how desperately you need it. Recently, we had a visiting parent in our home. One child at the piano, taking a piano lesson. The other child, smaller than Elena, little kid, was just along for the ride. And Elena was sitting in her high chair, still finishing up her lunch, when she looked over her shoulder and saw that the little rugrat was touching some of her things. No, no, don't touch my piano or books or piano, whatever it was. Oh, she was making quite a racket about it. And this caused great consternation to the parent of this little boy who's now being chewed out, you know, by the girl in the house where he's a guest. It seemed very polite. And so the lady, we'll call her Mrs. Smith, came over to Elena's high chair where she was sitting and said, "Little girl, Elena, you really need to learn how to share." Does Elena need to learn how to share?
Yeah.
Yeah. Will she be happier if she learns how to share?
Yeah.
Well, not immediately.
I'd say the result, the effects are pretty immediate, all right? If the sharing is from the heart,
yes.
Right? And that's what we're really, that's what we're talking about. She needs to learn to, not grudgingly, but she needs to learn to. But what do you think the chances are that Elena will look up to this lady and say, "Oh, Mrs. Smith, I'm so glad you've enlightened me. I'm going to be much happier from now on." In your dreams, right, you'd like to live that long. No, instead, kids and adults say, "You can't make me." Even if it's good for them. Have you noticed that? Have you done that? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. But you can salt his oats. Did you know that? So Karina salted Elena's oats. She said, "Well, that's all right. Elena's having trouble being pleasant out here with the rest of us. She can spend a little time in the other room. And when she's decided to be pleasant, she can rejoin us." So she wheeled Elena's high chair around the corner. Or at least if Elena decided that she was going to scream and holler about the kid touching her piano, we wouldn't have to hear it. Huh? And she gets to decide whether she really wants to scream and holler about that or not. Well, it was amazing. In about 15 seconds, Elena decided on her own that it'd be more fun to be pleasant. And she came out and genuinely, from her heart, shared her stuff. She wasn't going around saying, "Look, Mommy, I'm sharing now," or, "See, Mrs. Smith, I'm sharing." She was searching through her bins of toys, you know, for something age appropriate. "When I was a little baby, I played with this toy." So she's going around getting little baby toys for the little baby. And the mom said, "Wow, she was just a doll. She was so pleasant to be with. Isn't that wonderful?" When Elena wanted to be pleasant, she didn't have any trouble learning how to be pleasant. When someone else wanted to give her what she needed, she wasn't about to take it. How satisfied would you, as the reader of this story, be, or maybe an observer standing there, if the blind man had asked for one of those other things? Right? The gout, the elections, the Big Mac, the money, the How satisfying would that be as a reader to read a story in which a blind man meets Jesus and goes away with his stomach full? Talk to me.
It would have been a downer.
A downer. Yeah. That would be discouraging. That would be... Eh. Have you ever noticed people who come up to you and tell you what they need and expect you to meet that need? Sometimes you get that feeling. Yeah, I could give you $50 or I could put gas in your car, but... It just doesn't feel right. Because I'm afraid that's not what you really need. Kind of discouraging. Blindness is the obvious big deal, the biggest, most glaring issue in this man's life. It would be an absolute shame for a blind person to meet Jesus face to face and go away still blind. But it's so common. Where else in the immediate context have we seen someone come to Jesus and go away unenlightened?
A rich man.
Rich man came to Jesus, come running up, right? He wasn't blind, so he could just march right up to Jesus and engages him in theological conversation and goes away just as blind as when he arrived. And even the disciples, right? Jesus just gets through telling them, I'm going to go up to Jerusalem and be crucified and all these things. And what did it say? The meaning of his words was hidden from them. They couldn't see what he was talking about. See, the disciples wanted Jesus to do lots of things for them. Bring us justice, bring us power, give us authority, fix our lives so life on this planet is bearable. Right? But that isn't what they really needed. What they really needed was not justice. Go kick out our enemies. What they needed was mercy. What they needed was not Jesus to do things for them. What they needed was to have their eyes open so they could see what Jesus was really doing for them. Finally, what did the formerly blind man have privilege of doing when Jesus finally did pass by? Do you understand what I mean? Jesus didn't come to stay. He was journeying through Jericho. So when he came, we've read that part of the story, when he went, what did the blind man have the privilege of doing?
Following
him, praising God. And all the people who saw it also praised God. He's a witness to all those who observed that he was now following Jesus and praising God. Let's take a little walk back through the story. You ready for this? Have you heard of Jesus sitting here this morning?
Yes.
You heard of Jesus. Like the blind man had heard of Jesus, you heard of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what your big deal is. For the blind man, it was blindness. I don't know what your big deal is. Some of you, maybe I have some guesses. I'll try not to think about them, right? I know what some of mine are. Right? I don't know what your big deal is. But do you believe that Jesus can help you with whatever that is?
Yes.
Is it possible today that he's the only one who could help you?
Yes.
Because as long as you've got another solution, his arrival on the scene is no big deal. he comes and goes, I missed that opportunity, there'll be another. But if you believe that he can help you and he's the only one that can help you, then that puts his arrival in a new light, doesn't it? If you've got no other hope, I've got good news. He is near, even at the door. How does it feel? Even though we can't see him, right? Can you see him? We can't see him. But he's within earshot. How does it feel?
Comforting.
Comforting? What else?
Great.
Great? What else? There's some anxiety. Is there not? Knowing that he's near, that he's passing by. How can we be sure that when he comes, we won't miss him? And I don't mean to suggest that anybody is not going to notice when Jesus comes. But we're told that some people will follow him praising God. And some people will miss him. Is that not true? So there is hope and anxiety all at once. Knowing that he's near. It's probably good to remember that he's not passing by this way again. Do you understand what I mean? He's coming and going again. And those that follow him praising God will go with him. But he's not coming to stay. He's passing by. And since we can't see him now, what makes us think we're going to recognize him when he comes? See, like the blind man, we must cry out to him and learn to hear his voice, to recognize him by faith and not by sight. Before he comes. Because when he comes, he's passing by. And we won't have the opportunity then to learn how to recognize him. But now, when he's near, we can call out to him and he'll drop whatever he's doing and hear us. And we can learn to recognize him now. We must receive his mercy now, or he will come and pass on without us. So the question is, how determined are you to get his mercy while he is near, before he arrives? Are you in a popularity contest? Where other people's opinions matter? Not for something that important. Are you more concerned about what you think will make this life worthwhile? Will make you comfortable? Or are you determined to get the mercy of God no matter what? The good news is that when Jesus hears a cry for mercy, he drops everything and is attentive to that cry. You have his undivided attention. Does he have yours? Anyone hear an invitation? How would you put it in words if you hear an invitation this morning? Out of this story. Let me see my real need. I think God is just dying to give us all kinds of gifts. Yeah. And we don't want them. And his hands are tied. What can he do? You know, I couldn't think of a single story where Jesus gave someone something that they didn't need. You know, when people like the rich ruler came along, or Nicodemus, they think they're going to get from Jesus something. Jesus puts all these barriers up. He doesn't give them anything. They go away empty-handed. But people who understood their need, whatever it was, and cried out for that, they always got it. Yeah. But I can't think of a single time in Scripture where, well, maybe Hezekiah. I'd have to think about it some more to see if there are some of those cases, you know, where God gave someone something that didn't quite benefit them. What was that? Was it Elisha who asked for a double portion of Elijah's spirit and then had a very troubled life? I mean, he did more miracles than anybody, too, but he suffered. You've got to be careful what you ask for. Lord, help me see my real need, so I can receive what I really need. Anyone else? Any other invitation you're hearing? I will give you rest. Karina?
I just echo more. I think a lot of times I just the focus on the cares of this world.
Yeah. Help me see my real need. Anyone else? Anything different?
Remember, you'll never leave before 14, no matter what. A lot of times they won't answer your prayer when you want it. I stayed drunk for over 33 years until they answered my prayer, and I said, stop making it. 22 years now it's over. You know the Lord working in my life.
Yeah. I found that many times I've prayed because I want God to fix something like that in my life, and it's not what I really needed. And if God patched it over with a Band-Aid, I would have ignored the underlying issue. I challenge you, whatever invitation you're hearing, take a lesson from the determination of this blind man. And don't let anything stand in the way of pursuing that invitation. For our closing hymn, let's sing again. First verse of Pass Me Not. Stand with me.